First piece over here is Rav Hirsch at his absolute best. Okay? To take this seemingly dry discussion, the halachic discussion in Gemara, and make out of it a major understanding, hashkafic understanding of one of the foundational concepts in the Torah, is like, wow. Right? You know, so that ability to move back and forth between the two things, I think, is one of his strengths. In general, he's very fascinating thing. This is really not the issue for tonight. Just one point out. Rav Hirsch, we have now. Was it 2019? But he published in German a long essay to explain what he feels is a valid symbol in the Torah concept. He felt a lot of the mitzvahs work with ideas of symbols or certain messages, which the different mitzvahs act as symbols. And he felt in order to act as a symbol, it has to meet very, very specific criteria. So honestly feel that the idea behind this mitzvah, it's teaching us a certain lesson, without knowing all of the halachas of that mitzvah, and that this idea should fit into all of the halachas, he felt was not a valid symbol. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, mostly in Chelek Gimel, talks about tamei mitzvahs, different reasons why we do certain mitzvahs. You know, certain like type of messages and ideas that they give it. He does it based on a very loose associations. So the Torah give this mitzvah, teaching me a certain type of lesson. It doesn't exactly fit perfectly. That's good enough for it around. And Rav Hirsch was very strong against that. I once heard, I don't recall from whom, that Rav Zalman Sorotskin, the Lutzke Rav, who wrote the Pirush Aslayim L'Torah, so his son was a Baruch Sorotskin, was the Tells of Rosh Hashiva. So maybe I heard it. I only heard from a Baruch directly. I might have heard it from somebody who heard it from a Baruch. That the Lutzke Rav one time said, Rav Zalman Sorotskin one time said, he says, it's clear from Rav Hirsch's Pirush on Vayikra that there wasn't a rival in Teres Kahanim, but that Rav Hirsch did not know backwards and forwards. And you see that he pulls out rivals all the time. You know, if he's trying to build up a message, it has to fit every single halachic detail. So that's general. That was his approach, and the explanation why the Rambam felt it wasn't necessary. It's probably the conversation of a different time. So very beautiful essay about it by Yisrael Miller, formerly of Pittsburgh, now of Calgary. He wrote a few books for Art Scroll. One of them was "What's Wrong with Being Happy? What's Wrong with Being Human?" Something like that. I think he has two books. So one of those books, he has an essay about this argument between Rav Hirsch and the Rambam. Very interesting essay. That's not our topic tonight. But he, in this week's parsha, the Torah mentions the idea of kinyanim. So this, the Torah is writing in the context of this survey Noah, of in some way cheating somebody in a sale. But the Torah mentions kinyanim. And the more I actually learn about some of the halachas of how kinyanim work, the act of acquisition works from these psukim. So in this parsha, besides discussing the mitzvah of Shemitah and Yovel, etc., he discusses the halachas of the halachic concepts of kinyanim and what is the message behind that. So now we differentiate in halacha between the chasim, which are what we call American real property, which means karka, something which is the ground or something which is attached to the ground. The kinyanim of that are kesef shtar and chazaka. But the focus we're going to focus on right now is the kinyanim which are movable objects, items which are movable. So the kinyanim are not kesef shtar and chazaka. The kinyanim are mashicha, hagboa, mesira, etc. Okay, but movable goods can only be acquired by actually taking them physically into one's domain, mashicha, or by simply lifting them up off the ground, hagboa, or where the object is too big and heavy, such as a boat, according to some opinions, also with animals, actually referring to in the Gemara, whether that's only by behema gasa, larger, like the not by a goat or a sheep, you can pick them up. By mesira, which means, as soon as the sale is made, the buyer, with the knowledge of or the request of the seller, draws the object towards him, or where this is not practical, the request of the seller simply takes hold of it. So mashiach is to bring it to you, and it has to be, the Gemara says, it requires that the seller says the phrase, lech mashiach ukenei, lech hagbei ukenei. So the seller tells the purchaser, the buyer, go and do the mashiach and be karnet. So the purchaser then takes it to himself and he's karnet. So that's mashiach. Okay, fine. But the law that Metalta Niklim Mashiach, according to the teaching of Rabbi Yochanan, which is accepted as a law, is only an institution of the Rabbonim. The original law was that acceptance of money was the only means of transference of goods. There are Torah Mos Konos. Midaraisa, the kinyan of even metaltalin, of movable objects, was Midaraisa, was Kesef. By Karka and by Metalton, the Kenyan is Kesef. Now, by Karka, there's also Kenyan Shtar. There's no Shtar by Metalton. So, Saka works by Karka, not by Metalton. Mira Rice, the only way you're kind of Metalton is with Kesef. Khalipin. Okay? So, why? According to the Torah, the deal is completed by movable goods. As soon as the money changes hands, even the buyer has not yet touched them, and they're still lying in the domain of the seller. But our sages found it advisable to make the law that the deal is not considered completed until the goods are actually handed over to the buyer, so the responsibility for care against fire or loss in the interim between purchase and delivery lies entirely with the seller. Because if the kinyan is immediate, and he paid for it already, so then the seller says, listen, it ain't my problem anymore. Now the fire breaks out. He says, aha, tough luck on you. I got the money. Right? So since they haven't actually transferred the item, because Mashiach and Hagboa obviously are assuming that now we've transferred the item, I take the item to myself or I pick it up. So those guarantee they're not going to have that headache of this fight in between. So we said, you know what? Let the Kenyan bowl take effect later on. But Midaraisa, it takes effect immediately. Now that's Rabbi Yochanan. Rish Lakish holds the opposite opinion. It takes the phrase in this week's parsha, O Kanami Adam Yisecha, of our text, to expressly indicate that Mashiach is the means of transference. Mashiach refreshes Minotaro. You're Kanami Adam Yisecha. You are kind from that, you take it from that person. That's how you're kind. So the pasuk is actually saying the way you're kind is by taking it from the person. Then he says, I mean, it's meaning that the Yad Tarek also says that objects are to be acquired by handing over from the hands of the seller to that of the buyer. But Rebbe takes Miyad Mesechah to refer to not the form of the transfer, but to the nature of the object itself, which must be something that can be had from the hand of the owner, can be handed by him, is movable, and therefore the halachas of Noah reply to Metaltlin more than Mekark. Now the more says, so the main point of the pasuk is not the kinyan, because the kinyan is kasif. The point is, when you do this act of handing something over, alternatively, so you can't do it Noah, but ain't an Noah karkos, the more says. So that's the purpose of the pasuk, according to the Birchon. But okay, so we have this clearly halachic argument based on the yukim and the psukim, no hashkafic difference between the two, right? So far, so good. Okay. Now, according to the Birchon, the legal form of acquisition by Mashiach and Hagbob is minatara, only applicable to owner. The act of Mashiach or by Hagboa is only applicable to ownerless goods. Because you can't say you're kind of a kasef, hefker, so over there you do Hagboa, you do Mashiach. Or according to Tosis, by gifts, matana, again, I'm not giving any money. Okay, so there's no kasef, no compensation to be paid, so then the kinyan is through Mashiach or Hagboa. According to Rabban, even for gifts, Mashiach and Hagboa have no power of legal acquisition. And therefore, gifts of movable goods can only be acquired by chalipin, or with a connection with landed property, kinyan agav. See the Gemara above and see it. Okay. So, fine. Now, let's talk about where this comes from. So, I want to put the reversion on the hold for a second. There's a piece from Yeruchim, which I did not photocopy, in the end of Parshas Tazria, he talks about the idea of kinyanim. So Rabbi Yochum writes, it says like this. Let's stop for a second and think. What's the difference between a lamdan and a non-lamdan? Right? A lamdan understands that wherever you're learning, it's not just the specific thing in front of you. There's a principle there which can be expanded and applied in multiple scenarios. To get to that, the lamdus, the what is the foundational principle here, and as opposed to the specific case, is to be able to really understand it, and you can extrapolate beyond. And we understand that the goal is to learn Torah in such a level. Okay, we have a klal which everybody's familiar with, and what's Simcha Reilav Arayah? All right, tremendous klal. Has parallels in American law to some extent, etc. But not exactly the same, etc. But once I'm muxik, he says, but when a lamdan always asks why. Why is the Mitzvah Chayla Baraya? If I want to understand what is really the message here, you have to understand why is there such a thing? The Torah is putting its imprimatur on the concept of ownership in a very, very powerful way. What's that about? So he says, he brings over here a Goyen. The Goyen says that the Psukim is stressed by Purim that the Haman was bikish lahashmin laharigal abed is the Yehudim minarba zokhein tavanoshim yemechoshes ushalom avoyz, and he's going to take possession of, he's going to take all the booty. Okay, so we say, listen. Here's the deal, guy. We're going to kill you, your wife, your kids, your parents, your cousins, your brothers, your sisters, everybody, and not only that, they're going to take your car also. All right, like really. Like, you know, like, oh, hey, it's really horrible. It would have been okay. It's like, it was the Jack Benny, you know, joke. I mean, like, you know, really? So the Goyen says on this that there are Yesh Ba'adam Dalad Dvorim. Each person, his expression of his being applies in four ways. Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama, and his Kinyan. It's like, wow. All of a sudden we moved Kinyan up there together with the person's Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama, the three different levels of the soul, and his Kinyan. So he goes through, Haman wanted to destroy every one of them. The Shalom Sabbos, obviously, is to destroy the Kinyanim. And that's why Chazal gave us four different things to do in Purim. Right? One is connected to the goof that we eat, and then there's one which we give Matanas Lav Yoinim is connected to Shalom Sabbos, we give Matanas. That we make sure even the Niyam have money. Everybody has possessions. That's what the Goyen says. So on this piece, Yerucham says, so why are Kinyanim so powerful? Why are they so important? Says that if you live in a world where there be no Kinyanim, you wouldn't be able to do Chesed. The power of Chesed is rooted in the concept of I have what to give. If I lived in the world where everything they have didn't belong to me, so I can't act like a Kodesh Baruch and be a giver. And the whole purpose of the Bria is to be able to connect to Kodesh Baruch who created the world as a giver. So the Baruch created the concept of ownership as a vehicle to allow me to be a giver. Wow, right? It's like a whole new thought process. He says, and this is, so this, V'olam yesh u'motchim ka b'karish akolin shel, of the concept of ownership, they're against ownership. Mazikim mechoma lahanik bitla kinyonim. Communism.
This was a ka, yeah. He was around during that tikufa, yeah.
They don't know about like, the ownership. I'm beyond that. I don't. It's not important to me. Adarabba, everybody wants everybody. Everybody wants that. The idea that you own your perfect things is capitalism. It's like horrible. It's mean. It's horrible. Evil. Ah, you know. And I get she says, "Below yoidim klal sharish hanagoseim ayin bo." So they think it comes from goodness. Now Right? Their goal over here is not so much that they should remove the concept of the bialis that everybody should have, is that it shouldn't be the others have. That's deep down what's going on. He says, but what they've done is they've totally destroyed an expression of the human being. And it can't last. It has to fall. That's what he writes.
By being ownerless?
Creating a world which is ownerless, where there's no vehicle for a human being to be a giver. And it's a fascinating thing. What happened to communism? What happened to Russia? People became takers. Everybody was grabbing for themselves. Because it wasn't spread evenly. It wasn't, right? And people would hoard. My Shrey has a great joke. He says about this, indoctrination, you know, you get somebody up there and, you know, the polo truck would get up and he would, you know, talk about how great the motherland is and the giving to the... So they take the comrade and says, comrade, you know, being, you know, expression of a good member of the communist society, says, what would you do if you have two cars? He says, I'd give one of them to the motherland. He says, well, you have two houses. I give one to the motherland. Well, you know, you have two sweaters. The guy stops. He says, comrade, what would you do with two sweaters? He doesn't say anything. He says, I understand you. If you're willing to give away a car and a house, you're not willing to give away a sweater? I have two sweaters. It's very nice in the world of theory. Right? Right? So, the Gaon is saying that part of the expression of human being is the ability to have, I express myself on it, and the reason why the Bereshit created such a being, because that is it is expression of the human being, because that allows them to be something greater, move beyond themselves and to be a giver. So they destroy the Tzuras Adam. And you see what happened to the people there. Both the people in control, and it just ate them up. And the people which were on the other end, I mean, besides the fact that there was an oppressive society, they hoarded, because you never can get enough. So, let's go back to Rav Hirsch. So he says, by the way, the Mishnah says, Arminus Ba'adam, Arminus Shali, Shali, V'shalcha, Shala, V'shalcha, Zoyamina Beninus. Listen, we don't share anything. Mine, yours, you know, Ayn Rand, there's no such thing as welfare states, nobody, I don't help anybody else, you know, if you die, tough luck on you. Shali, shali, shakha, shakha. That's me to start.
You say Ayn Rand, is that what you said?
Ayn Rand, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. That's what I said.
Shali, shakha, shakha, shali, I'm a oritz. Right. You know, I'll give yours is mine is yours. There's no thing as ownership. That's amaratz. It's a lack of understanding of the reality. Shali shalcha, shalcha shalcha is chosid. Shali shalcha shali, shali shali is rosh. Fine, good. That one doesn't take too much to figure out, right? Zot Rav Hirsch. We go back to the reformation of all rights of possession. We can find no other basis for the possession of property than God's dictum. We keep shua. With which he, the original owner of the world, the real Kaddish Shemayim Ba'aretz, set man on the earth with the order master it, which means to make it his own by exercising his power over it. So that when a man takes himself out of the wild from a virgin tract that has not yet been appropriated by any other, with express or implied intention to make it his own, that by expressing consent of the original owner becomes his. Okay, so now, there's no such thing as ownerless land, really. Everything belongs to Kodesh Baruch Hu. The Bereshit, as the owner, said, take. Keep Shua. Take possession. Right? So, we're starting with, here we have a scenario where the owner said, take. And what did I do? I took. Aha! That's Mashiach. Right? So here I have that the first example of the Torah of how to take possession is the owner says take and I take and that's good enough. It must be respected and treated as such, and without his consent cannot be transferred into the possession of anybody else. So that for ownerless goods, the exercise of force, kivisha, just by taking them into one's possession, hagbor mashikah constitutes a right that they become one's property, etc. But even here, simple force is not the source of the right. It's not because I'm powerful enough to beat you to it, therefore I get it. The force is based on the same right, the declaration of the will of the original owner. So immediately we have the idea that property depends on two factors. The personal factor of the will of the present owner and the owner-to-be, and the factual factor of taking the object in possession. There is the will, and there is the action. So even Mashiach, the owner says, Lech Mashiach Ukenek. Go do Mashiach, then the Mashiach works. You don't say that doesn't work. So the Bereshim in the Torah said, keep Shua, now it works. You would have said that, I can't take possession of the land. Bereshim made the world. So it is. Right? The Gemara says, Lashem Morasim Loyo. Right? So both are true. So how does that work? So the Gemara says, through the process of bracha. But the reverse thing, it goes back to the first pasuk of Kiv Shua. Okay, so that's... Now, once that's how the Bereshim set it up, so in the sphere of human commerce as well, the current transfer of goods from hand to hand would follow the same course. With the consent of the present and the would-be owner, the transfers would be accomplished by the latter taking the goods into his possession. And that's what Rish Lakish says. So we're good. So what's on Rabbi Yochanan? Right? So Rish Lakish says, listen, let's go back to the first act of Kenyan in the world, when we're clearly back to the real owner. The real owner says, here's the deal. I'm agreeable, you take it, everything's wonderful. So that, therefore, Ahayim, we're going to work the same way. The person says, one human now has possession, says the other one, I'm asking, go take it. And he takes it and he's crying. So what's Rabbi Yochanan says, kasef.
He's masking that you need kasef afterward. I mean, right, it's not...
But kasef is not part of the Maisa Kenyan. It's a chai moment that I owe you.
Right.
It's not intrinsic at all to the Kenyan. Rabbi Yochanan teaches us that the means of accomplishing the acquisition of property, according to the original law, only applies to non-Jewish Noachayan world. How do you pronounce that? Right? Because that's the more important. According to Rabbi Yochanan, that kesef is kaino, but by Akum, Mashiach is kaino. So what's Takab Shat? Why by the Goy is Mashiach is kaino? Why by the Yid is kesef kaino? Like, what's the Hashkafic difference? But for the Torah ideal of life in the Jewish state, acquisition of goods can only be made by kesef. And that's the more Makaris that for that Karim Yechanan it says he darshins miyad amisecha. When you do it from a Jew, it's with kesef. When you do it from a goy, it's not amisecha. So then it's talking with Mashiach. So unless you're mistaken, he wants to suggest a pshat. The underlying idea of this teaching is to make the sharpest possible distinction between the relation of man to object in the realm of nature and the realm of fair dealing with the relation of man to man imposes. Okay, now, in general, a lot of the Baalei Machshava understand that the what is the message of the Zayin Mitzvah B'nai Noach? If you look at the Zayin Mitzvah B'nai Noach, the Zayin Mitzvah B'nai Noach basically are a way to maintain the earth. There's six los assays. And there's one assay, which is to create courts to make sure you do those six los assays. Right? So, it says, here's the world, respect the world. I'm not asking you, I'm asking you...
Don't mess it up.
Right? So, don't take somebody else's wife, don't kill, don't do a Zohar, like, etc. It's all don'ts. There's a sefer from Rabbi Zil Tauber.
Just Nifter,
right? That called, the name of the sefer is called Choose Life. And he gives a gvaldig mushal. The story, it's a true story, but the writer expands on it. About this non-Jewish woman and the Jewish man who were in a relationship, and then he's getting a little bit interested in her, and she's trying to understand what's happening over here. So she comes along to one of these seminaries to hear, one of these retreats, the Shabbos retreats, to hear what it's all about. So at some point in the Shabbos, the couple approaches the rabbi, informing, asking the question, like what? So he says, I want to tell you a fascinating thing. He says, when you travel, you came here by plane. you paid good money for that, for that, to be on the plane. And you know, and for most of the flight, you were stuck in your seat with limitations, what you're supposed to do, etc. Says, are you aware of the fact that there was people on that plane who did not pay a penny at all to be in that flight? And matter of fact, and they were allowed to walk around as much as they want. I said, who?
They actually got paid.
The stewardesses and the stewards. So that's not fair. He says, but what's the difference between the stewards and the stewards? He says, when the plane gets here and goes back, they go with it. So, so some people, the plane is a vehicle to get somewhere else, but then you leave the plane and you do, and you have what to accomplish. Some people are there to service the plane. The Jews travel through this world. The world is a vehicle to get us to a goal the Russian has for the world. The world is not the purpose. We're the passengers on the plane. What do we do with the time we're there? Well, we read, we're preparing for that next stage. So you get ready, you know, you sleep a little bit, and you read through your itinerary, and you study up on the maps where you're going to go, right? Is that, right? So, but the steward and the stewardesses, the Umas Arlam, their purpose here is to maintain the world. So she asked them, you know, well, can the stewardess ever change to become a passenger? Says, yeah, pay a ticket. So that's his moshel that he uses to talk about the whole process of difference between a Jew and a non-Jew, etc. So that's his concept. He says, so in the Russian set the world before the Israel comes along, you take, there is a concept of force. As long as the owner is agreeable, you take and you become the owner. So in the world of nature, you take without having the owner agreeable. The lion doesn't ask permission of the, you know, the sheep. It says, listen, sheep, you know, I'm a little bit hungry, I'm going to take you. It says, well, I'm not asking, you know. It doesn't work like that. It's just taking. Okay, so you understand, in the world of human beings, you know what, I got to get permission from the guy. The Russian gave us this, set this up in the beginning. As long as the owner is agreeable, you can take it, get possession. That's a beautiful way of doing it. You're very one with nature. Everything is wonderful, etc. That's not what the Torah wants from man. That's not the relationship between man to man that the Torah is expecting of the Jew. It's not about taking. There, where there are no owners and no personal relations involved, and there alone, force actually seizing an object is the source of a right to it. When something is hefker, okay, I get it. But here, where goods have already passed into possession, they become part and parcel of the possessor. That's part of the being of the person. And not even complimentary is actual grabbing to be an additional title to ownership. So there's no way to take it away from him. Like the guy was saying, that the part of the expression of a human being is the ability to have ownership. That's it's a vehicle expression of man.
Shatan pachim katanim.
So it's part of who he is. You can't take it away from him. You have to expect that. You have to respect that reality. So what can you do? Between man and man, rights and rights of owner are to be the source of ownership. Once the right to an object has been acquired, it passes automatically wherever it happens to be into legal possession of the new owner. The right of claim to the object is acquired by its value being accepted from the hands of the new owner, and then the object comes into possession. If I, as it were, exchange that for something else, I give you money instead, I give you the value of it, the full value of it, so in a certain sense, I haven't taken it away from you. Your possession is still there. Then it's possible that the items can be transferred. But no other way can it happen. Because kinyanim are intrinsic reality of the Bria. Which, once you respect, you recognize that and you respect that, there's no way I could take it away from you. That's the understanding of Birkhan's concept. It's like, wow. And that went from like an interesting Lomdashim Makloikas in the Gemara to this major Hashkafik Yisoid of how we look at kinyanim. He doesn't quote the Vilna Gaon, he doesn't quote like Rabbi Yochum does, but that idea that, so I think it's very geschmack that the Mishnah says that, you know, that the one who says Shali Shachah Shali, there's no ownership, is Am Haaretz. He's not knowledgeable what the Torah has to tell us. The Torah is respecting ownership in a tremendous way. Now, like Rabbi Yochum says, so why is that so? Because that is what makes us have to be the Baruch Hu. We have the ability to be givers. but that's so, it's such an intrinsic part of the expression of a man. There's no way you can take it away from me. The only way you can do it is as it were, is to give me something instead. So now I'm not really losing my reality. Now, then he says, but for the pathification of this theory in law, the presumption is assumed that the general respect for fair play would ensure that while it remains in the premises of the seller, it'll receive the same care protection as the latter's own goods, but that's not really true. Because therefore we said, let's do Kenya Mashiach because, right? Now, I want to take this. He touches on this a little bit. I'm not going to read it inside. I want to take it a step further. There's one exception to this. There's a fascinating discussion in the Lomdus of Dabur, which is Shalom and Rishusay. Right, Aveda. So in Aveda, actually, it's Rabbi Yochanan Shita, right? Rabbi Yochanan Shita, by Aveda, it's Shalev Eder Bishus, it's mine, but I have no authority and power over it. It's not really in my possession. I own it. Being lost doesn't make it, that's not mine. I don't have to do a new Kenya when I get it back. It's Eder Bishus. So Rabbi Yochanan learns out that someone's Eder Bishus. You can't sell. You can't be Makdish. You can't give us a Matana. You can't even be after it. You have no power over it. Okay? Taking a step weiter. Somebody finds an Aveda. Right? So, he's kind of... If there's... Were it not for the Dinei Hashava, in a scenario where there's no Dinei Hashava, so Loch is, he's kind of... Now, it belongs to Reuven still, but it's Darush Hamer Simon. So Reuven's Miyayish. So the Ksais learns it's not Hefker. It's Reuven's item, which Reuven was Miyayish and ownership. At that point in time, when Shimon picks it up, he can be Karnit. How did that happen? It's still Reuven's. The whole mile of Kinyanim is that it can be expressed and do something with it. I own money which I have in some vault and I do nothing with it. That's not the reason why the Bereshit created Kinyanim. So at the other end of the spectrum, that if I have something which I cannot do anything with it, it's not really ownership. That's Shalom and Rishusa. So at that point in time, it functions similar to the concept of Hefker. So somebody finds it can take possession of it. Since the Torah gave a mitzvah Shavah Zaveda, so that, as it were, maintains my ownership because I'm going to get it back through the mitzvah Shavah Zaveda. When there's no mitzvah Shavah Zaveda, because Dorash Eim B'Simen, and therefore the person is Miyayish, etc., so there's no mitzvah Shavah Zaveda, so then I can take it, even though it still belongs to the owner. Because it's not, there was no act of Hefker, so luckily it's still his. But that halachically would still, which precludes somebody else from taking it and becoming the owner, no longer exists. And that's the tifkat of the lomdus, I think, of what happens by so the milus hakinyanim is because it's an expression of man over the matter. That's what the mila milus is. But when that's not true anymore, so aveda shashat v'nor, so it's totally out of your possessions and the conversation. By definition, it's not yours anymore. Now, the more to give you two more, take it two steps weiter. So there's, you have a Gemara which talks about the idea that chametz isuri hanoah becomes shalom and brishusa. So the more says that betzim you should not be chayiv, the Torah is not chayiv for chametz that you own. Once it's also about knowing, you cannot do anything with it. It's not really yours. It's mine. What does it mean it's yours? I can't do anything with it. That's not ownership. So the Gemara says that it really should not, person should not be chayiv. The Torah put it back into Rishus as the word to be mechayiv you. The Torah held you responsible for it, even though you don't really own it, because you can't do anything with it. So Isurei Anoa, according to some Rishonim, is mavatal bialis totally. And some learn the Rashi says that Shaloi ben Brishusai. But that more so that's not called Shaloh. I'll take it one step right. There's a mechlekes in the Gemara where the king of Paris is the king of Guftami. So Reuven owns a field, and Reuven sells the field to Shimon. And Reuven says, "Listen, I'm still the owner of the field. I own it, but everything that the field produces is yours. All usages of the field belong to you." So the more it has the mechlekes is whether the king of Paris is the king of Guftami or not. The more it applies it to when they bring Bikurim. Who says Adam Asher Nasatali? The one who owns the pears, the one who owns the goof. Adam Asher Nasatali, the land. But one number says the person that's king of pears says Adam Asher Nasatali. You don't own the land. Yes, I do. Because what do you mean your own land, which you can't? The whole mile of kinyanim is that it expresses something. If I can't do anything with it, that's not kinyanim. The more says there's a dinner by a person. Person kills an Eved Kanani. The owner of the Eved kills the Eved. If the Eved survives for 24 hours, he's not Chayav Misa. He hits him, and the Eved doesn't die right away. The dinner of Yom Yomai. The Morris says, what would be a situation where the Eved is shared? One person owns the Guv, one owns the Paris. Who gets the dinner of being owning the Eved that he's. The Morris says, that's my clock. Can you get a Guv dummy? And one Morris says, the person who uses the Eved is called the owner. So ownership is not this idea that I can mark a number in the bank. That's not a giver, that's a taker. Can't do anything with it. So what if it's mine? I can sit there and I can enjoy the fact that I have a lot of possessions. What do I have out of it? Nothing. I can show my account I have millions and millions and millions of dollars. If it's not an expression of the human being able to do something with it, it's not that extension of mankind. Then it's a whole different thought process. So I think that's the message over here. That now one more piece over here. Just landed property, what we call real property, is not, as we already remarked, is by nature really in the possession of its owners. They do not grip it, but are gripped by it. It's not wandered from hand to hand. Its owners change on it. Its sale accordingly is more transfers of rights than transfers of objects, and therefore obviously everybody agrees whether that it has the kinyan is going to be kasef. And the idea of a shtar, which is the star is take this transfer of ownership and embed it into a piece of paper, and embed it into a document. There's a ma'aser with Rabbi Yisrael Hanan. There were two people having a fight about a piece of property, and they're going back and forth, screaming, "Other yelling!" And such. Rabbi Yisrael Hanan, the Gadol HaDor, after the whole thing, he said, "You know what? I hear what you said. I hear what you said. I want to hear what the land has to say." So he said, let's go out to the land. They go out to the field, and Yisrael puts his head down, like ear next to the land. And he's listening intently. And they're like, what is going on over here? So he pokes up and says, you know, I'll tell you what the land said. The land says that Reuben says that the land is his, and Shimon says that the land is his. And the land says, you're both mine. You're going to end up in me.
Oh wow!
So, right.
Mic drop.
So they, you know, this—they do not grip it, but they are gripped by it. I think is a very good description. We read this was in Tells, I think, in 10th grade, in the English class. So we had, you know, the reader book that you had different stories you had to read. There was a story called "How Much Land Does a Man Need?" Right? You know that story?
Yeah. Yeah. In William Bennett's Book of Virtues, I think.
Okay, good.
But go tell it. I like to hear.
What?
I like to hear you tell it.
Okay, so I haven't. Last time I read it was in 1976. So if you need to correct me, you can correct me, please. So it's about this person who won a right from the governor that to get a large tract of land. The deal is, he gets a tract of land, he has to, whatever he can walk around becomes his. He has from sunrise until sunset. If he doesn't close the box by sunset, he gets nothing. Right? So, and the whole town hears about it, and they come up, the day it's going to happen, and it's bright and early, he's there, and the whole city's there watching what's going to happen, and he starts going east, let's say, right? So, this mind saying, it's time to turn, start going north. He says, no, I'll go a little bit further, right? So he goes a little bit further, and then again, the same thing happens. And he says, I really have to start turning north, and he turns north, and again, he has the same thought process, and then he turns west, and then he turns south. And as, and the day is, the sun is going lower and lower, and he still hasn't closed the box. And he has this nice, gigantic tract of land. And the people are cheering him on, and he's pushing himself. And all of a sudden, he sees the sun goes below the horizon. And he's devastated. But the people are still cheering. And he hopped, it's on top of a hill. And for them, the sun is still up. He sees the sun going below the horizon. Right, but for them, they're cheering him on, and he's pushing himself, and he's exhausted, and it's uphill, and he's going, and just for the last moment, he has a heart attack. And the answer is, how much land does a man need? The mountain you need to bury the person. That was the end of the story. It was very morbid story for our 10th graders. That, what?
Intense.
So, I haven't tracked down that story since then.
It's in the book.
Okay.
Book of Virtues, yeah.
Okay.
They still read Books of Virtues in schools nowadays?
It wasn't written for school.
You said over
forbidden,
here.
Forbidden literature.
So, I was reading this piece over here from Hirsch about they are gripped by it. I thought of that story, and I thought of the Meister Rizal Chanan. Right? Says there's no such thing as taking possession of land, but the there's one exception, and there's a fascinating Gemara. The Gemara says that when it comes to countries, Kenyan Kibush is a Kenyan. The Gemara says, how do you know? It says Amun Umayyav Tiru B'Sichon. Christ was not allowed to take possession of the land of Amun Umayyav. Sichon fought with Amun Umayyav and took possession of their land, and then Christ was able to take the land of Sichon Vayeg. They can't take the land of Amun Umayyav. It's not Amun Umayyav anymore. It's Sichon's. Can you kibush? May kibush. Acquiring something through conquering a land is called a valid ownership. Right? So, the way I understand that concept, this is based on the I think it's a word for Rav Chanan, but it's this Yisoid. Whereas, in the individual level, if somebody steals it from me, he's coverage from me, etc., it's not really taking possession of it, he never can get really good ownership. But on a national level, what the Torah is saying, there is such a reality of whether we like it or not, of that's the sikhsuk which takes place between the nations. We can't, realistically, it's not yours anymore. A new nation has moved in.
Tell the Palestinians.
What?
Tell the Palestinians.
Oh, it works both ways. Right? I'm saying the Jews said, well, it's our land. How do I know? Because we owned it 3,000 years ago.
Right.
A second. Stop. There's been a lot of people who took possession since then. If that's the only way you have ownership, you don't have ownership anymore. If you want to say, listen, because the Torah says that it still belongs to us, okay, but you got to believe in the Torah. That, to argue with it's ours because once upon a time it was ours, that's not going to work. Well, based on history alone, that's what the Gemara is saying. The history that was once upon a time Amun Umayyav is irrelevant. It's not Amun Umayyav anymore. Now it's Sichon. So I can take it from Sichon. I can't take it from Amun Umayyav. I can take it from Sichon. But the start of the concept is, whereas by individuals, you never can say you really, even when the person steals it, it's not. It's the mitzvah of Shabbos Gzela tells him he has to give it back. He had no right to take it, so he never gets the real ownership. But when it comes to nations, that reality on the ground becomes a reality. It's not ownership. What do you mean? It's ours, but haven't seen somebody else living there for the last 55 years. That's not ownership anymore. That's the chiddush that the Gemara is saying. So, at that level, even though Karka and Exalus, when it comes on a you can never really steal Karka. because it, as much as there's idea of ownership, it's an ownership which is conceptual to a certain sense more than it's factual. So the fact that somebody else is on the land doesn't take that away. But when it comes to nations, that's not true. So what to think about of that? Why that's so? And the last thing he talks about how Kenyan and the Khalipa works. Okay, you know, I there's a piece of the Sosemis which I put in the packet, which I'm not going to get to. You can take a look at it. So, you know, Shemitah, Har Sinai, like, you know, every drush is like Shemitah and Har Sinai, what's the connection, etc. The idea of counting the years of the Yovelus, the idea of counting the days. So the Torah refers to this is Sheva Shabbosos Tzimimos. It's seven Shabbosos. It's not seven Shabbosos, it's 7 weeks. Seven Shavuos. Why is it Shabbosos? So, make a crude muscle. You have a person who has a business, right? So I don't know, his business is selling cars, right? So he decides he wants to go to the business of selling cars, and it's okay. I want to sell cars. I have to go buy cars. I want to sell cars. I have to learn all of the laws of what you have to do to sell cars. I have to get a property where I can store them. I have to have a property where I have to have a nice showcase how to show them. I have to have a salesman, and I have to train my salesman. He's doing many other things other than selling cars, right? So he says. So I see this guy. I follow him around for 3 months, and I see that he's spending time reading law books. I said, the guy's a lawyer. Right? That's wrong. That's not true. I see the guy going to auctions and buying cars. He's a car buyer. Also not true. I need to, at some point in time, see that there's some action which he's doing which defines what he is. And then once that's true, everything else is part of that also. The relationship between Yid and Shabbos is supposed to be that my Shabbos defines what my week is. It says, if during Shabbos I let go of my possessions, what am I? I'm a person who spends the vast majority of my time acquiring possessions, acquiring olam hazeh, etc. If that's what you do all the time, so maybe that's what you are. It's like just like the guy who sells cars might be spending 90% of his time doing things other than selling cars. But it doesn't mean he's not a car salesman. And I need to see what it is. Right? Because if Shabbos becomes the definition of what you're about, then everything else becomes baltal to the Shabbos. The same thing is true in the process of the 7 years, and the same thing is true in the Yovel cycle. So the Torah is giving us the purpose of Har Sinai. What the Torah gave us, it was the same concept. So I'll just tell you a piece of Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner brings a morale. Morale says, why does Masechta Shabbos start with Hutzah? Why the Malach of Hutzah? So he says, let's explain the question. If you look at Masechta Shabbos, take the first Mishnah of Masechta Shabbos out of the picture, that long Mishnah. Right? The next Mishnah talks about the lachas of Sabach L'Mincha, what you're allowed to do before Mincha. It goes to the lachas of what you're allowed to do, what you're allowed to do, not allowed to do Erev Shabbos. It goes to the lachas of how to light Neiris. And all of those are lachas. Then it goes to the lachas of being matman food for Shabbos. So clearly it's going in order. Right? Starting from the second Mishnah on, for the next four Prokim, it's going in chronological order. And then, you know, okay, then it goes, eventually, in the seventh parak, it starts discussing the Lama Tes Malachas. Okay, you know, that's Shabbos itself. What are the Malachas? We would have written Masechta Shabbos, the Mishnah of Kal Godel, of the Lama Tes Malachas, I would have put Mishnah Aleph. Okay, they use a different system to teach. But why is there Mishnah about Hutzah first, and then we go through this prokim after prokim about the Seder Hayyam? What you're allowed to wear to get ready, etc. And then we say, by the way, you know, what's going on? He says, what did Shabbos add to the world? It says, there's a unique element in Hilchos Hetzor. So, many cases of Hetzor, Mishnah is later on, at the end of the 7th parak, the 8th parak, etc., there's shiurim for Hetzor. The person wants to be chayav for Hetzor, he has to take out a certain amount, and depending on what it's used for, larger amounts, smaller amounts, etc. What about a situation where you have a kli, which is very large, and clearly a shiur Hetzor, and there's seeds inside the kli which are less than the shiur Hetzor? So lachas he's potter. Because the kli becomes a tafel to the seeds, and the seeds are not a shiur. Who decides that? The thought process of man. Your decision of what you want to do with it, what's ikar, what's tafel, and to the point that it defines what the action is, the place that you see that very distinctly is in the world of Hetzor. That's really what Shabbos added to the world. The 6 days of the week are the kli, they're all of the actions. If on Shabbos you stop and you decide what the purpose of the world is, you change the kli becomes the tafel, and the ikir is something else. So the whole purpose of Shabbos being given to us is this ability to redefine what life is about. What we're doing the whole week can be defined, even though it's a very big kli. It's a lot of action. It's a lot of work, a lot of physical reality. It's not defined by physical reality. It can be a gigantic box, but it's irrelevant if I decide that that's not what it's about. That's not what its purpose is. So the first mitzvah, the whole chiddush of Shabbos is this yesod, that we can define what life is about in our minds, not by what we're doing, but what we decide of what the purpose of life is. That's the chiddush of Torah. Torah came along and said there's a nature, and you're bound by nature, and there's all the things you have to do with nature, and that's what life is about, etc., etc. No. You define yourself as something greater than that. You rise above nature. Nature doesn't define you. You define nature. So that's the connection to Shemitah and Har Sinai. That's the word that he says. Okay.